He's ranked among the greatest composers born and educated in the United States, so why is it likely you haven't heard of William Grant Still? Well, Leon Botstein is trying to rectify the situation by presenting a performance of three of Still's landmark compositions at Lincoln Center this Sunday. Leon Botstein is not only the music director of the American Symphony Orchestra, he's also the president of Bard College, and I'm delighted that he could come by to talk with us again today.
Thank you for having me.
This sounds a bit like Aaron Copland. Were they contemporaries?
They were almost exact contemporaries. Still was born in 95 and Copland in 1900. And Copland had severe Alzheimer's toward the end of his life. So when William Grant Still died in 78, Copland had already stopped composing and conducting actively.
When did you first hear about William Grant Still?
Well, William Grant Still really through the founder of the American Symphony Orchestra, Leopold Stokowski, who was a pioneer of the Afro-American Symphony, which was a kind of signature piece that Still wrote, which really is the only piece that people think about. The trouble with it, of course, is that it's a kind of tokenism piece. You know, an African-American who is not a jazz composer. He's not he's a classical composer, period. And so we expect him to write music that sounds ethnic. People never ask that of Schoenberg, that it should sound Jewish, whatever that would mean.
Or converted to Judaism.
Then he reconverted. So, you know, he went however you do it. I mean, so Ernest Bloch had that problem as well. So here's an African-American composer who stuck to writing in tone poems, writing quartets, writing symphonies, a lot of movie music as well, a career very similar to Copland in that regard. And yes, he did use African-American materials, and he used the subject of his own racial heritage as part of his compositional ambition, but he was not... He was not interested in being only typecast, in a way, put into a ghetto. And the ghetto was a very small one because it didn't overlap with the very famous jazz musicians of his generation.
Well, he's often referred to as the dean of African-American composers. But you mentioned that he didn't want to be in a ghetto. Many people object to being classified as a woman composer or a woman artist or an African-American artist or whatever artist. And yet he did label himself Negroid at one point, didn't he?
Yes, no, he was very straightforward. He embraced his identity with pride and thought there was no contradiction between that and entering the world of concert music as a composer. So he has a symphony, for example, the one we're doing on Sunday, the second symphony, which is called Song of a New Race. He also was a universalist. He believed that music was an instrument that could bring different cultures and races together. We're doing a tone poem called Africa, with the piece where he really made his fame, he got his recognition, was Darker America. And so he didn't shy away from the merger of his own experience as an individual and also of his own people and the concert tradition, which is no different from Bartok and no different from Tchaikovsky and no different from Stravinsky and no different from any individual, any writer who reaches a worldwide audience but uses the experience that he or she really knows well, which is their intimate experience.
And you say that jazz was not really much of interest to him. He was influenced by Varese? Edgar Varese?
Well, that's the odd thing. There are jazzy moments, of course, because it's the music of his time, just as Copland incorporated jazz. I mean, every composer in that generation.
And half of the French composers did.
You're absolutely right. So it wasn't that, but he was not strictly speaking the way Ellington, who later wrote music for orchestra, was a jazz musician. William Grant Still was had two teachers, really, in a way. One was George Chadwick, and we were doing a piece by him, who was the dean of American composers. He ran the New England Conservatory, was a fantastic composer, very prolific.
Also forgotten.
Also forgotten, but unfairly. And terrific symphonic works, terrific quartets. Some quartets have picked that up now. A really terrific composer, a kind of American Brahms, if you will. But he also had this idea of being American. So we're doing a Rip Van Winkle overture. There's also a Tam O'Shanter overture. I mean, he liked this notion of, which all their generation did, of their supposedly authentic ethnic identity, whether it be Irish or American. And the question of what was an American identity, of course, which was a whole different debate. So he studied with Chadwick. And then for about a two-year period, he was very close with Edgar Varèse. And Varèse admired him, and he admired Varèse. However, he made the decision, which other composers of his generation did, not to go down the modernist road. So his music is very, very accessible, beautifully orchestrated. So you have the real craftsmanship that we associated with, for example, great movie scores of the period. And it's very skillfully done. But he decided not to go against reaching a mass audience. Copland made the same decision.
But Varèse does obviously appeal to a lot of people. Charlie Parker was a big admirer of Varèse. I'm not exactly sure why these people felt that connection to him, not that he wasn't a great composer, but there must have been something in his music that appealed to people who made a very different kind of music.
Varèse has an enormous sensuality of sound. What's fantastic about Varèse, he's unerring about the sound grabs you. That's the whole power of an acoustic performance, you know. The simply imagination of what an instrument can do or a voice can do. We're doing one piece by Varèse for soprano and small orchestra, and you hear it right there. You know, the instrumental, the idea that sound is something physical is present, and every jazz musician has that sense. Every musician altogether has that sense. I think that's where Varèse has his appeal.
Now, where did Still come from? What was his background? Was his family musical?
I don't know much about the prior generation, but he had a formal education, and then he taught as well. He had a quite a respectable career, you know. He did a lot of work for Hollywood. He also
kinds of films?
I've never seen any of the films, and so I'm not a film buff, so I'm the wrong person to ask. What he did do was he wrote also in the operatic field, and very famous was a 1949 collaboration with Langston Hughes, which was done here in New York, called Troubled Island. And that's worth reviving. And it was very controversial because his politics, one of the reasons we don't remember William Grant Still is that he fell sort of afoul of the two camps that would have really championed his cause. First, the African-American community, because he was conservative, he was an anti-communist, and he had the exact opposite politics, let's say, of Paul Robeson. So he was not allied with the progressive movement of the 30s and 40s. And then he was a virulent anti-communist, which meant that in the 50s, he ran afoul of the white liberal community that might have embraced him, even if as a token, because of a desire to show absence of prejudice. So he fell between all these chairs.
It's interesting that he comes from Mississippi, but really becomes a New Yorker.
Oh, yes.
And was he part of the Harlem Renaissance?
Again, whether his real career may have come at the end of the real Harlem Renaissance, one doesn't really associate him as a central figure in that. He also wanted to have a more cosmopolitan reputation. He really did not want to be so completely typecast.
My guest is Leon Botstein, who's the music director and conductor of the American Symphony Orchestra, which will be presenting Revisiting William Grant Still on Sunday, March 22nd at 3 p.m. at Lincoln Center, performing three of his landmark compositions, Darker America, Africa, and Symphony No. 2, you want more information about tickets, you can go to our show page at WNYC.org. Were these, when these things were first performed, were they received well?
Yes. I think that Darker America particularly was the oldest piece, and that really drew a lot of attention because it was a musical expression of the experience of African Americans.
And it was composed in 1924. And now we're talking about a time when Stravinsky is the rage, isn't he? Schoenberg is influencing young composers?
Yeah, but we've written the history of 20th century music until now with too much of a one-sided bias. Just as Stravinsky, neoclassicism, for example, in the 20s was very popular, and Schoenberg had the 12-tone system, which began really in the 20s, there was a continuing tradition of conservative composition. People like Ernest Bloch. We think of composers Howard Hanson. There was a whole, and Copland himself, moving, who looked at modernism and borrowed a little bit, but they stayed on a track which was pretty conservative. And
a lot of Americans. Piston as well.
Yes, Piston, terrific composer. Terrific, underrated composer. And we're looking back at the 20th century. You know, both Stravinsky and Schoenberg were great publicists of themselves, and they were also terrific innovators and great composers, without saying. But there was a trend that was a little bit more conservative. But also there was a novelty, despite Dvořák's advocacy of the African American tradition. You know, an African American composer getting some recognition. I think he was the first African American composer to have any work performed by a major orchestra in the United States. So. The second piece, which is the Second Symphony, was really a work where he wanted his later work to be received because of its qualities as a symphony, as a composition, its dramatic qualities, its compositional qualities. And the Africa, the scholars think, really is one of his best pieces. He worked longest on it. He revised it a lot. We're doing the latest and most complete version of it.
Well, okay, so let's say people at this concert are knocked out by what they hear. Do you see some kind of William Grant Still revival possible?
Yes. I mean,
do you think he can be reintroduced into the repertoire? Would you complain about being deadeningly repetitive?
Well, I think, first of all, the concert has a piece by Chadwick and by Varese on it, so there's a kind of biographical aspect to it. I think that William Grant Still, Darker America, for example, the Second Symphony, Africa, these are works which deserve to be in the repertory. There are other works that you could look at that might qualify as well. It behooves conductors and orchestra managers to look at the corpus of work, quartets, to look at his string music, for opera companies to look at Trouble Island and see whether, in fact, more of his music than now exists should be in the repertory. And he was a major figure and wonderfully talented, and the music makes an extremely compelling impression. And why he doesn't appear is perhaps he doesn't fit our preconceived stereotypes. And I think that one of the great – we didn't plan it this way, but with the first African-American president of the United States, who himself defies easy stereotypes, it's time for us to not think of him the way his contemporaries did, as a kind of anomaly, but look at the quality of the music.
Just one more thing. I mentioned earlier that you're not only the music director and conductor of the American Symphony Orchestra, but you're also president of Bard College, and we've been reading a lot about the problems that colleges are facing these days because of the economy. Is that something you're concerned about at Bard?
I think everyone is concerned. There are two issues. One is maintaining the integrity of the academic programs, and the other is being able to finance students. The government's going to do something on the latter question. And the former question, each institution has to make adjustments. We've made the decision to keep the integrity of the academic program intact. It means trying to raise more money, do some belt tightening. I've taken a 10% cut in salary. My colleagues in senior administration have. We are retaining and preserving the faculty ranks. And we think also it's a time for innovation. I'm to like this time. This is a good time for institutions who have been sort of self-satisfied and doing things, you know, just because it was easy and convenient. This is a time to think about really delivering on education in a better way, because we have to figure out that you don't only improve things by adding.
But the same sort of thing, there are concerns about the future of classical music. A lot of people are not listening as much. Younger people are not going to concerts the way they did in the past. And the United States doesn't support music in the way that other countries have.
Well, this we can change. I think that it's partly our fault. We haven't taught it well on the college level. We have a terrible music education system, which can be improved. It's nothing to do with the music. Young people, and the nice thing about the economic downturn is that it's now that people, you know, can't shop anymore. So how are people going to use their time? There's a wonderful opportunity to recalibrate the values. So what we have to offer is far more significant and important than it ever was. So it seems to me this is a great opportunity to redeem both the importance of classical education, education in things which aren't useful. This is a time to celebrate absence of utility and also the world of the imagination. And that's what gives us a sense of value. And classical music has a lot to offer. The problem is not with audiences. As you point out, the problem is with bringing the music to the public and making it accessible. If it's $300 to go to an opera performance, of course there'll be no public. But if actually we reached out, and we need to protect this art form from some of its more snotty defenders.
Leon Botstein is music director and conductor of the American Symphony Orchestra. They'll be presenting Revisiting William Grant Still on Sunday, March 22nd at 3 p.m. at Lincoln Center, performing three of Still's landmark compositions, Darker America, Africa, and Symphony No. 2, also compositions of Edgard Varèse and who's the other guy?
George Chadwick.
Yeah, see, I've already forgotten. If you want more information, details are on our show page at WNYC.org. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.